This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at willuiuc.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Today, listeners, I welcome your questions for registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. She joins us on the first Monday of the month to talk about diet and nutrition. And this month, she's brought a special guest with her. Her name is Jody Gatewood. Jody has completed her master's thesis and is now a dietetic intern at Iowa State University. If you have questions about diet and nutrition, give us a call. Susan and Jody will do their best to help you out. Here are the numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Susan Kundrat is a sports and wellness nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move. She specializes in developing personalized nutrition plans for athletes and the general public. She's also an adjunct lecturer with the Food Science and Human Nutrition Department at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Questions about diet and nutrition are invited. Again, those phone numbers, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-WILL. Welcome to the two of you. Susan, good to see you again.
Yes.
Jody, welcome.
Good to be here.
Susan, you want to give us a little introduction to Jody?
Sure. Jody's actually spending a week with me. This is her last day. And as a dietetic intern, that's basically the practicum for dietitians. So she's completed her undergraduate program and her master's degree and now is doing her practicum. So she's been job shadowing me and trying to learn a little bit more about the field, particularly in sports and wellness, because that's what Jody wants to go into too, and looking at different clients and doing things like that. So as an internship, usually it's a 6-month to 12-month practicum, and it may be several different places that a dietetic intern might go. Usually some of it's at clinical. It's always at a clinical setting, a hospital setting, which has mostly been in Des Moines, right, for you. And then there'll be practical experiences in the community or, again, working maybe in private practice dietetics as well.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about this internship that you're in. What are you currently involved in?
For 3 weeks, I've been doing community nutrition. So I was at a WIC clinic for a week, and then I'm spending a week with Susan and then a week of just kind of wrapping up. But my first 6 weeks were at in the clinical setting. So I was at a hospital in Des Moines, and you work with cardiac patients, diabetes patients, pulmonary and geriatric. So you get a wide range. You see all sorts of things.
So there are lots of opportunities for different kinds of practices.
Right. And I think it's really expanding because I think traditionally people think of dietitians as being in hospitals in the clinical setting. But it really is expanding. And I think there's a lot of opportunities for dietitians being in private practice. Sports and wellness is a growing area. And also in food service, a lot of dietitians going into restaurants and working with restaurants or food service management. Mm. So there are a lot of areas.
What led you to the field?
I've always been interested in health. I actually started out thinking I wanted to go into pre-med, but then I got really interested in food and in cooking, and I started to realize how many problems like diabetes or cardiovascular disease and obesity could be prevented or helped and treated through food and diet, and so that's what led me there.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, thanks for bringing Jody.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for having us both.
It's particularly appropriate as this is National Nutrition Month.
Yes, it is.
What kind of activities are going on in National Nutrition Month?
Well, I think people get excited around March. I think we always think it's springtime, but really I think it's partly because it's Nutrition Month. Don't you think, Jody? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very exciting. So it's kind of fun every year. And the American Dietetic Association, which is our umbrella organization, practice group organization for dietitians, sponsors National Nutrition Month every year. And so you might see things going on in the community. There are a lot of different things going on all around the country for this month. And it's an opportunity to really think about what nutrition, I think, in a positive way can do for you. And so the ADA has some certain, really things. This year's theme is really fad-free. And so the idea is National Nutrition Month, 100% fad-free. And, of course, that we know that a lot of people can really get kind of swayed by misinformation when it comes to nutrition. One of the challenges, and Jody and I have talked about this in our field, is there there really are a lot of quasi-nutritionists or a lot of people who maybe call themselves nutrition experts that don't have a degree or don't have the background or the practical mm-hmm. experience. And so really one of the ADA's goals is to say, gosh, you know, if you're working with someone on nutrition, make sure they're a registered dietitian, make sure they're licensed. Both Illinois and Iowa have mm-hmm. state licensure, so we're licensed just like physical therapists or an athletic trainer or pharmacist is licensed to practice, a physician, a nurse. And so it's real important that you kind of know who you're working with when it comes to individualized nutrition. I think a lot of people could provide group education and things, may not be a registered dietitian, but have the background. But that individual work is really important to have, as you mentioned, Jody, both the background in terms of the science and the degrees, but at the same time, the real practical information in the field and practical experience in the hospitals and those kinds of things where you're working with patients. And so even though I don't work in a hospital, I always tell my students, all my undergrad students who work with me, that it's so important to get some kind of experience in the clinic or in the hospital because you're going to work with that. You know, I might have a 300-pound football lineman who's also got high lipids and high blood pressure. So you got to be able to manage that as well as help them eat to gain muscle mass. So it's kind of a combination of things.
Yeah. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and today is the first Monday of the month of March, National Nutrition Month, and registered dietitian Susan Kundrat is with us, and she's brought with her a special guest today, Jody Gatewood. Jody has completed her master's degree and is a dietetic intern at Iowa State University. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions about diet and nutrition. The phone numbers 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Jody, at this point, are you a registered dietitian or you have to complete this internship? And then
I have to complete the internship, and I'm doing a six-month internship. So I will be done at the end of June. And then after they do the paperwork that says I did the internship, they'll send it into the American Dietetic Association. And then I have to sit for the registered dietitian exam. So if I pass the exam, which I plan to, then after I pass that exam, I will be a registered dietitian.
Okay. Well, the best to you in that endeavor. We had a listener call in who left us with a question.
Okay.
Here's the question. This listener is apparently interested or concerned about sodium salt in the diet. And the listener wants to know, can you lower the sodium level in cottage cheese by straining it? The caller said regular and low-fat cottage cheeses are all about the same when it comes to the level of sodium.
I don't know that you would lose that much sodium by straining. I'm sure you'd lose some because some of that sodium will be in the liquid, so there's no question that you're going to lower it a little bit. It's still, as far as I know, going to be a pretty high sodium product. Sometimes you can find, and it's still really difficult to find these, but sometimes a little bit lower sodium, lower salt ricotta cheese, sometimes you can find that. And if you're using it in things, then you might be able to use a yogurt as a substitute, which would be, you know, something that might be looked at as well. Cottage cheese is really, it's a high protein, high calcium, really great addition to the diet. And so it also might be that maybe you have a little bit smaller serving of that and you're surrounding it with fruit, so something that's going to have potassium, which helps kind of offset or balance that for high blood pressure. But I imagine, I don't know the percentage of what you'd lose. You'd lose a little bit, but probably still going to be fairly high sodium.
Yeah. The ricotta is a good suggestion, and that comes in 4% and 2%. I don't know if it comes also in non-fat.
Right. I'm not sure if it comes in non-fat, but definitely, like you say, a low-fat version with that too. And that may be, again, another good option.
Okay, very good. Let's take a call now. A listener on line 4 calling in this afternoon from Bourbonnais. Hi.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hello.
For me?
Yep, that's
you.
Sorry,
I couldn't quite hear you.
Okay.
Yes, this is Joel from Bourbonnais, and I have a question. I'm 60 years old, and I'm just taking vitamin supplements. I'm curious if there's any advantage to any certain age group to take certain types of vitamins and supplements.
Well, there certainly are some nutrients that we have to be really careful with and make sure we get enough of as we age. A good general rule is to take 100% multivitamin for your age and gender, for sure.
Okay.
And as we age, for example, we don't absorb vitamin B12 as well. So that's certainly a vitamin that everybody really after about the age of 50 should have, either in a multivitamin or have in a supplemental form on its own.
Just go with the 100% ADA?
Right. If you go with B12, unless you've had any problems, usually you can get that in 100%, you know, all-purpose multivitamin for your age and gender. And again, as a male, you'd probably want an iron-free version of a supplement, unless for some reason you've been low in iron, but we know that, but generally males get enough iron and we don't need to supplement with that. The other thing that we're finding, certainly you hear a lot about calcium and vitamin D, and this wouldn't be across the board for everybody, but we do know, particularly as people get older and maybe they don't eat as much, or certainly maybe they're not drinking as much milk that they drank as a kid. I have a lot of clients who will tell me, well, I used to drink milk, I just don't drink it anymore. Or especially if you get away from a lot of milk, sometimes it bothers your stomach a little bit when you have it more. And so we know calcium and vitamin D are two really important nutrients as you get older as well, partly because they're so important for maintaining strong bone. And we're finding out more about calcium and vitamin D, maybe with preventions of certain cancer, and certainly helpful with blood pressure. And so those would be things that most of my clients, it would be unusual if I have a client who can get all that in food. They typically just don't eat enough milk products and other high calcium foods to get enough calcium and vitamin D. So those would be two others that I would look at very closely, in addition to the B12. And then we also know other B vitamins like folic acid, B6, are really important for cardiovascular health. And so that, again, you could generally get in a multivitamin as well as just a wide range of foods. But that's another good reason to take the multivitamin.
Yeah. Is there any vitamin that's better for endurance? I play a lot of tennis. I like to have long, like 2 hours of good tennis. And is there any vitamin I could maybe stock up on in my body a little bit, as like before I play or something?
Well, there's not necessarily a vitamin, but there is a nutrient. If you think about what we call the macronutrients, or the big foods we eat, basically carbohydrate, for example, carbohydrate, whether you have a banana before you play, or a bagel, or whether you're drinking a sport drink during activity, or maybe doing all the above, carbohydrate is the thing that your muscle runs out of energy-wise. So when you're playing tennis, you're burning a lot of calories, and once your carbohydrate stores are low, you'll run out of energy.
Gotcha.
And carbohydrate's also important for immune status. And so the thing I would do is I would say, well, whatever you eat now, maybe add at least a glass of juice or a banana or maybe another bowl of cereal an hour or two before you play.
Apple seems to give a good perk up.
Pardon?
Apple seems to give me a good perk up, it seems like.
Sure, sure, and that would be great. And then during your workout, if, you know, I have a lot of clients who use a sport drink. I have a lot of clients who do what my mother did with me when I was young playing tennis, and that was taking orange juice and mixing it half and half with water.
Oh.
And basically it's the same percentage carbohydrate, and a lot of people who like more of a natural way to do that tend to do half and half with juice. And that's really helpful because the percentage of carbohydrate you get in during play is really the amount that your body can utilize and digest at a rate that helps you with energy in the muscle. And so, you know, it's really a helpful way to get some more carbohydrate energy, which we know will help you play better and longer.
Yeah. Is there a counteraction? I thought I read somewhere about vitamin D and vitamin C. Too much vitamin C takes one out or something like that? Or,
well, vitamin C has a real big range for what you can take in. You know, we have these upper limits or upper levels of nutrients. And vitamin C, it's 2,000 milligrams or above, which is a lot. I mean, you can certainly find 1,000 milligram vitamin C tabs or supplements very easily and get overboard. But in typical diets, we might eat 200 or 300 milligrams of vitamin C. Plus, you might get 60 or 75 milligrams in a multivitamin. So it'd be pretty hard to go too high. And large amounts of that, and sometimes people will take a lot of extra C thinking that will help energy or it will help their immune status. And in real large amounts, it could cause some stomach upset and things like that. But generally, getting it from food in a multivitamin, you're really safe. There's not really a problem.
I want to thank the listener for his questions, his call this afternoon. Let me ask Jody a question, you know, in terms of before exercise and during. Susan mentioned carbohydrate. What about after exercise? Is there, when I am working hard, I get ravenous, you know. So at the end of that period of physical activity, what's a good thing to have then? Same kind of thing?
Right. Afterwards, you want the carbohydrate, but it's also important to get some protein with that because it helps to helps your body restore the glycogen, the carbohydrate, as well as the protein. And it helps to repair any damaged muscles when you physically exert yourself or whatever. Sometimes your muscle breaks down a little bit. So you want a mixture of carbohydrate and protein. Something that that is sometimes a shock or surprises some people is that chocolate milk, like low-fat chocolate milk, just 8 ounces of that can be a good recovery drink because it has a good mixture of carbohydrate and protein.
Okay, very good. Let's talk with another listener now. Next, we're going to go to a caller on a cell phone on line one. Hi.
Yes, my name is Mary, and I am calling with a question about working with a relative who has cancer and undergoing chemo treatment, and as a result is fatigued, has loss of appetite, and the doctor's saying we need to get more protein into this person, and just wondered what suggestions you might have for a diet for someone undergoing chemo or radiation treatment and how to supplement their loss of appetite.
Good question.
Yeah, that is a good question. And it's a common question and a challenge, no question about it. One thing that I would suggest that tends to work pretty well is, of course, sometimes getting liquid nutrition is easier at that time. And you can try a lot of the liquid products that are out there, and you've probably tried them, things like Ensure and Boost and other things that are out there.
Right, that's correct. Need to do more than that, though, it sounds
right.
Like.
Other things that work really, actually can work really well is even making your own. You know, I think back to when I did work in a hospital in a clinical setting, and we did things like take maybe some chicken breast or maybe some roast beef or some type of meat, even things like tuna or salmon that's in the package or in the can works well. And you take that and add just a little bit of broth, maybe a little bit of chicken broth to that. And you can even add in that some, you can even throw in some oatmeal or some toast or something and almost make kind of a concoction that's, you can blend that and you can make a concoction that's high protein that really tastes good because it's basically meat. You know, something different. I think one of the concerns is everything is so sweet that they might drink. And so if you mix this up and make kind of a, you can make it into a drink or make it into something you can spoon and eat, but it's real concentrated protein without having to eat what meat, which might be really, may not taste good in that way. It might be too dry. So that works well, too. You can also put in some instant mashed potatoes and a little bit of milk or some more of the beef broth or chicken broth to that. And the other thing you could look at, too, is buying some 100% whey protein or 100% protein powder that you could just mix in with things. So, example, if you had something like cottage cheese and you mixed a little whey protein in that, or if you had yogurt, you can mix a little bit more whey protein in there just to gradually in a lot of things during the day boost the protein intake as well.
The whey protein, is that something that you can find at local grocery stores, or do you have to go to a special shop for those?
Yeah, the whey protein you would find at a health food store or at a just Walgreens, at a pharmacy.
Okay.
Yeah, they would have, and what you want to look for is just 100% whey protein is probably what I would suggest is the best one to use. You can get soy proteins and others, but whey might be the easiest thing to start using and easier to digest for most people too. So, and just a scoop of that, one scoop in there, which isn't very much, is 20 grams of protein. So it's quite concentrated, and maybe start with a half scoop, adding to a few things, and doesn't have a lot of change in flavor. So it tends to work pretty well too.
Very good. All right. Well, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Susan, how do you spell that? Whey.
W-H-E-Y. And
oh,
it's
okay.
A milk protein.
Okay, I gotcha.
Yeah, so it's a milk protein. It's highly nutritious, very concentrated, and you can buy it in just a powdered form and mix it really in anything. I mean, you know, anything, you can be creative and put it in thickened soups. That might be another thing the listener might want to try. If you have a soup that's already a cream soup, you can put some more whey protein in there and thicken it more, which sometimes makes it easier to eat for people, too, when it takes a lot of energy to eat. And I don't know, sometimes I've had clients who can handle peanut butter and nuts and things like that, but a lot of times that's harder to chew or maybe feels funny in the mouth. But
now, can you add that whey protein into liquid drinks like juices?
Right. You could add them too into liquid drinks. Sometimes it won't mix as well, but if you actually use a blender.
Like a stick blender or a, a blender.
Yeah, a blender blender. So,
okay, very good. Let's take another call. A listener on line two in Marshall. Hi.
Hello.
Hi there.
I just have been hearing about some of the great benefits of dark chocolate, nutritional benefits of dark chocolate. All kinds of claims are being made. Just wondering if how much of some of these claims are real and whether or is it kind of hype. And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, there has been research that has shown that dark chocolate is higher in antioxidants, and so there are benefits of those antioxidants. It's just important, though, to make sure it is dark chocolate. It's not like your M&Ms, you know, your milk chocolate M&Ms. It's the dark chocolate. So you just need to watch out because there are a lot of products coming out. But there is some benefit to it.
Yeah, there's some good information. And I think the thing to remember, too, is that it's still caloric. So it doesn't mean really we want to eat half a pound, although that sounds good. But that might be a little much.
Maybe just an ounce or so.
Right. Just maybe an ounce is a good serving. And there are a lot of other products that are on the market that you might see out there, too. Things like Cocovia, for example, which is a little bar that has dark chocolate. So it has more antioxidants. It also has some of these products called stanol esters, which we've talked about on the show before, but it's a compound that actually lowers blood cholesterol. So they add those into the bar. And so one serving of this is like one of the supplements of a stanol ester that you might take in a day to help lower cholesterol. And so it's combined with this real dark chocolate that's higher in antioxidants. And there are other products like that that are coming out. So mm-hmm. you might find that not only the real dark chocolate, which certainly does seem to be beneficial, but also there are a lot of things that have other compounds added to them that we're starting to see. So it's kind of interesting to see what food companies are coming out with.
Yeah. And now if I had a bar of chocolate and I cracked off a piece, what does an ounce look like?
Well, a lot of regular size candy bars are maybe 2 ounces or 2 1/4 ounces, something like that. So let's say if you had a typical Hershey's bar, maybe half of that would be a good serving in terms of what you might have in the day. Yeah.
So the Hershey's company is now coming out with dark chocolate products.
Right.
So,
mm-hmm.
Okay. What do you say we talk with another listener? Caller on line 3 in Philo.
Hi.
Hi.
My question is, I sort of know the answer to part of it. I had a rude awakening when I went to the doctors, and I finally tipped the scales at 150. I never thought in my life I'd be 150, because my good weight is 120.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to start, you know, I know I sort of what I need to do, which is to eat less and healthier and exercise more. But what's a ballpark for what a weight loss, you know, typically would be, you know, for, you know, so like a couple pounds a month, or I'm trying to think of when I can look forward to mm-hmm. being my 120 pounds again.
Well, I'd say two things I might start out with. One is that it's hard to know if 120 is still the best place for you. So the most important thing is you see progress, is that you're moving
yeah.
down. And really, I think for women, and the fact is you don't have a lot of weight to lose. I mean, it may feel like a lot to you, but it's
yeah.
not as if you're starting at 200 and trying to go down. And so maybe a pound or, you know, even a pound and a half every couple weeks would be very doable. We always
okay.
say no more than 2 pounds a week mm-hmm. weight loss, but that's for probably if you have a lot of weight to lose. And if you start a whole exercise program when you hadn't been doing anything, we kind of look at this idea of around 500 or 600 calories per day, whether that's 300 calories more you exercise, maybe you walk an extra 45 minutes. That'd be about
mm-hmm.
300 calories for your body weight. And then
mm-hmm.
maybe you cut 200 or 300 out of your diet. And if you do that consistently for a week, you probably will lose about a pound. That would be
okay.
about a pound. So 500 calorie difference on a daily basis. Probably
mm-hmm. like an extra 45 minutes of activity.
Right. I mean, you want to look at what you can do in your day and what's reasonable for you and make sure that, you know, you're okay from your physician to start an exercise program.
Mm-hmm.
I think one thing that I see a lot of clients doing, and Jody, I'm sure, can talk more to this because she's also a personal trainer, is it's so important that you actually have a really good workout program. In other words, it's good to start walking and things, but once you get active, it would definitely be worth meeting with a certified personal trainer because you might find that there are little things you can do to boost your workout so that you actually burn some more calories. You're actually working at your level of heart rate that's appropriate for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's helpful too. And then if you think in your mind, gosh, if you're losing a pound a week, that's as fast as you'd want to do. And even if you lose a pound every other week, that's good. That would certainly be body fat loss that you would lose.
Okay.
Anything you want to add, Jody?
Yeah, and I was just going to say, along with cardio, maybe even trying some strength training. So that would be good when you would get with the personal trainer and they can develop a strength training program for you, because that can help build muscle mass. And as we age, that's something that is we're always losing. So.
See, I used to do that, but I never had to watch my weight. And then over the last 10 years, because I'm postmenopausal now, now I'm just thinking walking would be a good start.
Mm-hmm. That is an excellent exercise, and you can do it anywhere. So.
Yeah. Well, thank you. That gives you something to aim for.
You're very welcome. And again, what Susan said earlier about you might check with a dietitian or with a physician about, you know, because you don't want to, maybe we weighed 120 pounds when we were 18 or 22, but, you know, maybe we don't want to go quite down that far.
Right. And I think from a health standpoint, one really good thing, and this might be a good goal, first goal for the listener, is we know that even losing 5% of your body weight, for most people who need to lose weight, that will have some metabolic changes. Mm-hmm. That will be a true benefit for you. So, you know, let's say at her weight, if she lost 15 pounds, that's 10%. So 7.5 pounds is a good first goal, because that'd be 5% of her body weight. That would be a significant weight loss for her body. So that might be a good thing to think about. 7 or 8 pounds is your first weight loss goal, because I think it does help for us to have something in mind of where we kind of want to be. Mm-hmm. We don't want to think all the way down to 120, but we do want to think, okay, let's try to lose 5%. And that will make a difference in her overall health.
Okay, let's take another call. A listener in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hello.
Hi there.
I was wondering about the practicality of adding soy flour to soup. Maybe 2 tablespoons or a tablespoon to, I'll say, 4 servings.
Okay. With soy flour, you can add soy flour to different products. It may or may not, thicken the way that you might anticipate it. So you might want to just play with it and see what works depending upon your recipe and what you have. I will say that you might be interested, if you're looking to add soy flour, be interested in looking at the University of Illinois Center for Soy Foods, mm-hmm. which is, you can get the information online, but it's here on campus in Urbana. And they have dietitians who've worked with the program who've developed all of these different recipes, including a lot of things you can do with soy flour. And it might be worth getting one of their cookbooks to see, because they actually test all these things. I've used soy flour some myself. I've never really added the flour to soup to thicken it. I've used it in other things like bread products and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it might be that there are certain ratios that would work really well from the test kitchen that would be worth looking into.
Can you make a roux, you know, the basis for a soup with soy flour?
I would think that you could. That might be a good way to start it, and then you wouldn't add it later, but you'd have it all set up, so that might work better like flour would. Yeah.
I'll try that.
Okay.
And I was also one comparative advantage of tomato drink and orange juice. Tomato juice and orange juice. Would you get more antioxidants with the tomato?
Well, they're both going to be healthy for you, no question. The tomato juice, we know that tomato products, when they're processed, like tomato juice is, becomes a lot higher in the antioxidant lycopene. And so the more processed the product, the higher it is in available lycopene. So tomato juice in general is extremely high in a particular antioxidant lycopene that we know has been beneficial, maybe preventive in certain cancers, helpful in heart disease. So if there was one thing, if you love tomato juice and you said, you know, I could either, sodium is not a problem, so I use the regular, or if I do have high blood pressure, I can get low sodium, and you had just one of those 6-ounce glasses a day, you would really help your diet amazingly, just because it's a really quality product. Can you tell I'm very excited about tomato juice? But so it's one of those things that's a simple thing to do, and it's so loaded in nutrients. And then orange juice is very similar, very high in vitamin C and some other antioxidants, not high in lycopene. So it's high in other things, but it's certainly they would complement each other, I guess is what I'm saying, because they both have a lot of key nutrients. We know citrus fruits are very good for you in general. And so orange juice can be a lot higher in calories than tomato juice. So that would be, has a lot more sugar, a lot more carbohydrate. So if calories are an issue, you'd say, well, tomato juice is probably my better bet. It also has some vitamin C along with the lycopene.
And then eat the orange.
There you go.
That was a great idea.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Next, we talk with a listener on line 4 in Mattoon. Hi.
Thank you. I wonder if Susan could talk about, or someone, talk about the connection between soy products and breast cancer, the estrogen receptive positive variety. Are there any soy products that are safe?
Yeah, the soy research that has been done, and a lot of those studies have been done here at University of Illinois, so you're probably aware of a lot of those. It seems to be that if you are estrogen positive, estrogen response positive, then we really don't recommend a lot of foods that tend to have natural estrogens in them, like soy. Or, there are some other products that maybe have some of these natural estrogens, like flaxseed, for instance, where we don't necessarily want to have a lot of those products. We do know, however, that in studies that have looked at intake for years and years in typical Asian diets, where they may eat 1 to 2 servings of a soy food a day, there doesn't seem to be any increased, incidence of breast cancer. So I guess the most prudent thing to do if someone knows that they have had breast cancer and it was estrogen positive is to, if you have soy food maybe 3 or 4 times a week or something, to me that is very low amount. That wouldn't be really something I'd worry about if you really like it. But there's no reason to start using it. In other words, if you have been estrogen positive, I wouldn't say go out and start using soy. I would probably just not use it unless you really love it and had used it in the past and really liked certain things. And
did
maybe
you mention flaxseed?
Yeah, flaxseed has some natural estrogen products in it too. And there have been a few studies that have looked at flaxseed and in males who've had prostate cancer that's been more hormone-driven prostate cancer. And so there have been some people who have recommended against using a lot of flaxseed in those patients. And so flaxseed, again, is something that you wouldn't necessarily eat in a typical diet, but you might add it for health benefits. And so if you would be one of those people who'd be positive, I probably wouldn't use a lot of flaxseed because that might be a more concentrated source.
Do you have any knowledge of weight gain and loss while taking tamoxifen?
Well, I know it can cause some weight changes. I don't know specifically the amounts, and it might be different with everyone.
I wondered how a person could avoid it.
Right. But that certainly can be a side effect, some weight gain with that too. And I think the most important thing is to try to, figure that out. Talk to your pharmacist too to see from a standpoint from the medicine. But also make sure you're really on a sound diet. I think nutritionally there are a lot of really good things you can do after cancer to try to, from what we do know, to try to get a really high nutrient diet together and still maybe avoid anything that could potentially be problematic if it has been estrogen positive as well.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Let's take another call. A listener in Champaign on line 2. Hi.
Yeah, I just had my fasting cholesterol check, and my numbers seemed to check out okay, except for my triglycerides. And I was wondering what I could do to get those down, if you could tell me.
For triglycerides, more of like sugars and carbohydrate. So if you're eating a lot of refined carbohydrate, that would be something that you would want to watch, or a lot of sweets. So switching and eating more whole grain breads and less refined grains and less sweets would help and benefit. And also, if there's any weight loss, possibly losing weight. But alcohol is also something that can raise your triglycerides. So alcohol intake is also something to watch.
Okay. So less refined carbs and sugars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think in some studies we've noted, it's kind of interesting in some of the early studies with heart disease where we put people on much higher carbohydrate, very low fat diets, it seemed to be a lot of those people actually had trouble with triglycerides. And so that's kind of where some of this initial stuff came out of, saying, well, gosh, carbohydrates are good if we're trying to cut fat, but you don't want to go too high if your triglycerides are high. So sometimes people will have a benefit, and you may have a benefit if you just watch your total carbohydrate intake. You don't need to go on a low-carb diet, but as Jody mentioned, maybe try to have whole grains, less sugar, maybe even, you know, have two or three fruits, but not a lot of juice in your case, those kinds of things where you've cut down a bit on carbohydrate. Maybe bring up your proteins that would be good fat proteins. In other words, things like natural peanut butter and almonds and walnuts. And we think that having more of this good fat, fatty fish like salmon and tuna and things, also helps with triglycerides. Oh. And it's also quite common with triglycerides, and you can talk to your physician about this, but one of the common practices with high triglycerides is to go ahead and go on a fish oil supplement. Usually that's just a small amount, 1 to 3 grams a day, but that's pretty common practice now if your triglycerides are high. So you get more of this good omega-3 fat, which tends to, in many cases, help bring down triglycerides along with more of the whole grains, enough protein, more good fats in general. And then many people, if they lose 5, 10, 15 pounds, if you need to lose weight, then triglycerides will often drop with that weight loss as well.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Let's talk with another listener. No, we don't have that listener quite ready to go yet. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Dietitian Susan Kundrat is with us this afternoon, registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. She joins us on the first Monday of the month to talk about diet and nutrition. And this month she's brought with her a special guest, Jody Gatewood. Jody has completed her master's degree and is a dietetic intern at Iowa State University. And come this summer, come June, she'll be a registered dietitian as well. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. You can join us, listeners, with a question for Susan, for Jody, this afternoon with a telephone call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Another question came in this afternoon, Susan, about estrogen and estrogen in milk as it relates to the early development of breast tissue in girls.
Yeah, well, the question really is whether we are just exposed to a lot more hormones than we ever used to be, partly because of the hormones that are used in feeding animals, and whether that's then in meat that we consume or milk that we drink and those kinds of things. And that's becoming, you know, a real question. I'm not an expert on the field to say, well, is it a real problem or is it not? But I know it's something people are a lot more concerned about. And now it's just a lot easier to find milk that is hormone-free or organically produced milk or milk that's hormone-free. It's definitely more expensive. There's no question. And but I think that would be something that I think we're going to see more. I think we're going to see more of those products around, because there certainly are some scientists who have looked at the links and found, gosh, there must just be a lot more exposure. I think the other thing that seems to be playing a role with this early development, particularly in girls, but we see it in boys too, but it's, you know, we're just able to follow it more in girls, and is partly the fact that so many of us, and kids included, overeat. And so just the portions of food that kids are becoming bigger so much faster, I think that's a big part of it as well.
We had a feature during the noon hour today from NPR's Patty Namond, and there are studies underway that are looking into are we coming into puberty earlier than we have a couple of decades back because we're heavier.
Right.
Because some girls apparently are overweight already as early as 3 years old.
Exactly. I think that to me is a real big part of it, because we're of course seeing, and I see this in my private practice and with a lot of the collegiate athletes I work with, and I don't know if it's just, I mean, I think it's partly the case where a lot of athletes have to be bigger now, but I have so many more college athletes I work with already with high lipids, with extremely high lipids and other medical problems, a lot more high blood pressure. And I think that some of that, even though these, you know, a lot of my clients are athletes, still, they're just so much bigger. And so I think we're seeing other things that certainly might be related to this overconsumption, even if it's for your sport, but yet it's still overconsumption in a lot of cases.
Let's take another call. A listener in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hi. I've got some construction going in the background, which just started up. They're running a saw, so I'm moving away from the sound. There was an article in the News Gazette on the 27th of February. I cut it out because I thought it was so interesting, about vitamin D. It was a summary of research, current research on vitamin D.
And I had heard, probably a lot of people, other people have noticed about it seems to prevent, reduce the likelihood of developing multiple sclerosis. But this article also said that there are some initial results that it may have an effect on Alzheimer's patients, may help prevent, they don't know yet, they're just, they had an early observational study, that taking, let's see, 2,000 IUs of vitamin D and where possible 12 minutes a day of sun exposure could reduce the incidence of breast cancer by about 50%. I thought, whew.
Mm-hmm.
And it also apparently has been shown to be involved in preventing colorectal cancer.
Right.
And it says also, now this isn't, you know, a report on details of scientific research. It's a journalist reporting on a bunch of different studies, but that it could reduce, let's see, at least half of serious invasive cancers and make the remaining ones milder and far more treatable. Now, there's a big difference between 2,000 IUs and 400 IUs, which is what the current RDA is, isn't it?
Right, right.
And I've also, a long time ago, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, there was an article in Consumer Reports on Health. It was by one of their consulting doctors, and he was writing about how people in nursing homes frequently have really, really low levels of vitamin D.
Mm-hmm.
And he really had to push his mother's doctor to test her blood levels and then to get her injections of vitamin D to get her blood levels up to where they needed to be. I just find this really, really fascinating. And it's just amazing what we're finding out about some of these nutrients and for our bodies. But I have another question for you, which is not related. I saw in Consumer Reports that you should take, I'm suggesting that you take fish oil capsules for omega-3s, and it's saying that was the only efficient way to get enough omega-3 in your diet. I'm a bit concerned about overfishing of fatty fishes in order to supply these omega-3 capsules. And I'm just wondering whether you can get enough omega-3s from adding in flaxseed, ground up flaxseed and or walnuts, et cetera. Do you have any thoughts about that? Because when I look at the figures for flaxseed, it seems like it would provide enough if you can actually digest the ground up flaxseed.
Okay. We got about a minute or two left, so let's let Susan and Jody jump in.
Yeah, well, let me say one thing about the vitamin D. I think, first of all, that is something that you may have to ask your physician to check, but because it's coming to be more and more important, I think, in a lot of different areas, that it's worth checking, because you can check vitamin D levels, and it's not really typically done, but a lot of my clients have had that done because they've had problems with absorption of calcium and whatnot. And it's ended up that their D is so low that they can take all the calcium in the world and they can't absorb it because you need D to absorb it. So that is something that I would discuss with your physician if you're concerned about that. In terms of the fish oil, I think if you're taking it therapeutically, like we had mentioned a little bit ago, have high triglycerides or someone has really bad osteoporosis and the fish oil seems to help with decreasing inflammation, you can't really get enough in food. If you're taking it just as part of a healthy diet to be healthy, which it sounds like this listener is concerned about, then I do think you add maybe 1 or 2 tablespoons of ground flax, and that's how I would use it. Again, unless there's any problem with some estrogen-positive cancers or things like that, you'd want to discuss that with your physician. But you can do that. You can add, for example, a quarter cup of walnuts. It's a really good source of getting these good fats, more of the monounsaturated, but the good fats as well. And so soybeans are a pretty good source. So there are other things besides the fish itself. And you could certainly look at those options as a way to get some additional, you know, 2 or 3 servings a day. You might need to cut down on fat somewhere else if you're adding more walnuts, if you're adding flaxseed. And it is true that ground flaxseeds in general is anti-constipatory. So I had a client the other day who's added it in, and then she came back on her second visit. She said, "You forgot to tell me something." but, you know, so it's a good thing. It's a natural remedy, works really well, but it does have other properties besides the good fat.
Yeah. When it comes to nuts, You mentioned walnuts. Almonds also are good. Mm-hmm. Are other nuts also, I mean, I love pecans. Can I go there?
Well, other nuts have good fat, and they have monounsaturated fat. Walnuts tend to be really the best nut when you're looking more at omega-3 type fat,
okay.
even though almonds are very good and high in monounsaturated fat and good fat. But probably if you were going to add one, I'd say walnuts or soy nuts. And soy nuts, of course, are roasted soybeans. They have a lot of protein. They also have more of the good fat and more omega-3 type fat. And so maybe roasted soybeans and walnuts would be two of the first things to look at adding, along with flax.
Okay, very good. And there we'll leave it. We're out of time. Jody, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon.
Yeah, it was
afternoon.
Fun to be here.
And Susan, thank you.
Yes, thank you. Good to see you.
We'll see you next month, April. Jody Gatewood and Susan Kundrat have been our guests this afternoon in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine.